Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's episode is a four questions episode with Kristen Gerwick. If you're a loyal listener, you'll know from the previous podcast that Kristen wrote and directed the brilliant short film, The Wind Phone, that not only got six awards at the 2019 Film Invasion Los Angeles, but we're going to find out in like a day or two if it made the shortlist of 10 films for the Oscars. That's right, the Oscars for Best Live Action Short. One of Film Invasion's films is up for that, and we couldn't be happier for Kristen and her partner, Linda Christina Reedman. So light a candle, say a prayer. Let's hope that these women, the beautiful film made by these women and the amazing cast and crew that they had, gets its just desserts at the Oscars in January or February. Honestly, I can't forget. Okay, so anyway, this is a four questions episode, which means we're going to find out Kristen's answers to favorite films of all time, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser known film that you should seek out. Now look, she's practically an Oscar-nominated filmmaker, so no more setup. Let's just listen to Kristen, and I'll tell you about TV shows and film festivals afterwards.
Oh, this is so hard, but okay. So I'll tell you a recent. It's rare. Sometimes you have films that have been your favorites for so long, but it's very rare when you meet a new film. In the modern, you know, age right now, or, you know, your modern kind of world right now, because usually there's so much nostalgia attached to your favorite film, so it's hard to let a new one in. But it was nominated for Best Foreign Film this past cycle, and it was called Never Look Away, German film. The director is Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck, which I'm sure I'm butchering his name, but in my version of German there. But, this film was really inspired. Actually, I love where he found his inspiration was what inspires creativity or genius. Where does that come from? And that's the kind of study of this character, this protagonist who lived through World War II. His cousin was taken away to one of the camps in Germany as a mentally ill person and exterminated. And he lived through this very, very difficult period. And, you know, we move through his life and find out how he found his painting and his art and what it takes to find your art. And what we really discovered is that so much of it is the pain that we suffer through our lives. And that's what he said. It's so much of that is really pain that heals, you know, once the scar has kind of come to its more healing stage. And that's what the character learns because he's doing this really incredible modern art, but his mentor says, you know, explains how he found his art, which he calls his Greece, because he works with Greece and he has a very interesting story surrounding Greece during a combat incident, how he was used to, they used it to heal his burns. And that's how he found his Greece, which becomes a metaphor for so much like, what is your Greece? And he realized it was this trauma that he endured, losing his cousin and living during that really horrific period. And then it comes together and there's so much beauty in the script. It's like literally a perfect script. Everything comes full circle. Every seed that's planted flourishes. It was so beautifully shot. It was so touching. I actually like had a reaction to it with the producer I watched. We saw it at AFI and I was startled for a few hours at its beauty. I ran up and geeked out towards the director and was just like, I hate approaching people, but I just had to. And I was like, your film, it just, you know, it's sometimes rare too to find films that touch you that way now. It was just so beautifully crafted and covered so much history. And then this very individual character in such a brilliant, seamless way. And I, you know, had to tell him how brilliant his film was. And he was smiling and I was like, you should be smiling for like the rest of your life, you know, to create something like that. And as a filmmaker to know how hard it is to create something so perfect, in that way to me. It really was magic, and I'm not surprised it was nominated for an Oscar. I mean, last year's category was really tough. Capernaum was also an amazing film. Like, I could, you know, add them, a lot of them, to my list as well. Girl, Shoplifters, was, you know, I'm a big fan of Corita, and it was a brilliant film too, but this film, it impacted me, especially, I think anyone as an artist can really appreciate, you know, the struggles of trying to find your voice. So it's very inspiring, and was just a beautiful, uplifting film that could have just been also just very dark, but it had a nice levity to it too.
So, I gotta see it. I haven't seen it.
It is. Yeah, it's beautiful. I think it's on Amazon or iTunes now for rent.
Yeah.
So it was that was a really beautiful film and modern. And I'll get into something else. Oh, this is so hard. I have to put on my list. Oh, I think Space Odyssey 2001. I'm a big Kubrick fan. This film is so existential and so profound, and he was really pushing the boundary at that time period. I love his work in general because he's a director that can work in so many genres. And the films each have such a specific character. But all the genius of him. and I love directors that can move through genres, in that way. But Space Odyssey, I mean, I think it really pushed the boundaries of filmmaking at that time, and it was so existential and so not, I guess, traditional narrative story at that time.
Yeah, I mean, he did, it's an experimental film.
It's very experimental.
Yeah.
And I think it was one example where the book was written after it.
I believe he collaborated with Arthur C. Clarke on the screenplay. And then, yeah, Clarke wrote the book after.
Yeah, which is because usually it's the other way around.
Always the other way around.
And just how it made it contemplate life. And I even heard that some viewers were actually like taking hallucinogens to watch the film because it's visually has that power to make us think about the origin of life. And each shot looks like a piece of art, literally, photographic modern art, and the set design, and just to have that kind of bold vision and to really, to go for it in that way. It just,
yeah, no, I mean, you want to talk about world building.
Yeah.
I mean, he builds three separate worlds that all work.
That all work. And you walk away, I think, that a great film, besides the crafting and the cinematography and the acting, but it's like, do you walk away with a certain impacted, emotionally affected, questioning your perception of the world? When a film can have that kind of impact, and pushing the envelope in that way, I think you've accomplished a pretty amazing feat as a filmmaker. And to become that iconic, it's just, and something that, you know, can still today be watched and appreciated, and is, you know, timeless. I mean, with all of his other work, because I could, you know, add that all into the fold, but he's pretty prolific, and obviously, I'm sure, an inspiration to most filmmakers.
Definitely, definitely. Sometimes it's tough to pick which Kubrick people put on the list.
But that one, and I do enjoy sci-fi, and I'm very fascinated by the universe and space. I find myself being a junkie of all those, like, black hole shows. And
Nova and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And the Big Bang Theory, and just so much of that that was kind of explored in such a spiritual way, too. It was just really beautiful for me, and something that I watch over and over again and never get tired of looking at. So I'm torn between...
You can do four if you want, if you're down to the last two.
Yeah, I'm going to something in a completely different, but I have to throw in some Like It Hot, Billy Wilder.
Very cool.
I think it's one of the most brilliant comedies of all time.
It's a perfect screenplay.
It's a perfect screenplay. It literally is just the perfect film. And again, I'm a big Billy Wilder fan. I love Sunset Boulevard as well, and a lot of his other work. And I love how he can move through genres as well. But I just feel like even at that time too, two men dressing up as women, it was still pretty progressive And it's something that I feel like can resonate with modern audiences. You know, I've shown it to people that don't watch old films.
It's timeless, right?
It's timeless.
Completely timeless.
Totally timeless. And it's just, you know, you can watch it over and over again. And that's, I think, another good mark of a film. When you can watch a film over and over again and have an experience, the filmmaker really has created a legacy of work there that...
For sure. And Tony Curtis and Marilyn Monroe are both icons for their look, and they're both so brilliantly funny
so brilliant.
In that.
And Marilyn is such a brilliant, I think...
Her acting is amazing.
Yeah, she's also amazing dramatic work. I think she was really kind of underrated for her acting abilities. And I watched a documentary where they talked about her in the acting studio and just the power of her dramatic scenes.
Yeah. But it's just Hollywood didn't, I'm sure she was...
Well, she started her own production company. Yeah. She wanted to get out of these.
But roles. I'm sure if we saw all the lousy movies they put her in,
yeah.
where she wasn't good at all, she was just window dressing, right?
So, right. And as an actor, there's only so much you can do with
especially in her era, it was.
Yeah. So that is just something. It just every time I get such a great feeling from that film. So, like I walk away happy and it's just like putting on a warm blanket almost and cuddling up. And I'm just like, this film, it does that for me. And anyone I've ever shown it to, no matter what walk of life they're from or what their taste is, I know a good film, it usually transcends like time and culture and people can appreciate it.
Totally.
So love that. And now it's between Phantom Thread and Tree of Life, but I'm going to go with Tree of Life, Terrence Malick. Again, I just admire the bravery of this film. It is so experimental in terms of storytelling, and it doesn't really have a traditional narrative. I mean, it's very up so much for interpretation and so visual. And I love that he had done, you know, Thin Red Line and The New World with Colin Farrell, which were much more like epic traditional films. And then I feel like in this one, this was his soul. You know, like he was like, I'm going to do something that, and I'm not going to care if people understand it fully or, you know, if they say do one for them and then one for yourself. I could feel this was one for him. And I so admire, you know, that bravery in filmmaking because it can go, you know, you're really exposing yourself for criticism, and especially when you're an established director, you know, who's done some great projects, and then to take a risk like that, or, you know, cause people are always waiting to be like, oh, they're not good anymore. And you know, they've lost it. And
yeah, I mean, he's always been challenging anyway. I mean, I think he's a little past having to worry about his next gig, but yeah, absolutely.
But
he did a few that you could tell weren't for him. And then
he did. Yeah. And then that, and the performances, I mean, Jessica Chastain and Brad Pitt and Sean Penn are just, you know, because a lot of it is so, you're just sitting with these actors in certain moments, and the combination of like these visuals that were so, I think, speaking to the origin of life and the beautiful human connection. And it was such a harmony of a visual world that was very intangible at times. And I guess maybe to some people could feel the film a little esoteric or hard to grab onto, but I think
a lot of people find him really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. But I had such a beautiful, like, it really spoke to me in terms of just like the nature of, you know, the human connection in life. And I thought it was such a brave film to take on. And I could really feel that this is a part of his soul that he wanted to share. I mean, I don't know, cause I haven't talked to him, but that's the feeling I got. And so when you feel that, you know, it resonates with you as a filmmaker, you're like, yes, you know,
absolutely. And I'm sure he's the type who would say the film means what it means to you.
Yeah, it's in. So kind of how I feel. I think that one, cause for me, the Wind Phone in a way was something that was so like vulnerable from my soul, and it was experimental and could have gone so many different ways. So I think maybe at this time, you know, cause this hasn't been a favorite of my all time, but this year just my films change a lot too. Cause there is a master list,
sure,
but the other ones,
you keep master list,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. That move up.
Is it like 100?
There's like, 100. There's definitely like 40 or 50 on there that I'm just like, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's, yeah.
And there's new stuff. I mean, the foreign films this year really blew me away.
Really?
That they were quite, I could say watch all of them. And
then Roma won, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there were so many. When Roma, I'm a big fan of
Cuarón.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love E Tu Mamá también.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
I don't know if he's missed for me, but that's beside the point. Children of Men, I think it's like the greatest thing ever made.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, oh my God, there's another film, City of God, that I also love.
City of God from Brazil, right?
Yeah. It is an all-time favorite. It's been an inspiration for work now.
I would imagine with your project.
Yeah.
Dealing with gangs.
Oh God, I mean, so raw, and it's just, that film is, yeah, you gotta take a seat after that one.
Well, here, let me get you over to your yeah. Underrated.
A film that I thought was underrated that I really loved, and it might be because I'm a huge Beach Boys fan, was Love and Mercy. Bill Paulette directed. He's a longtime producer of a lot of epic films, and this was his first time directing in a long time. Paul Dano is in it, who I am a huge fan of his work. I think he's one of the most brilliant actors of our generation. John Cusack and Elizabeth Banks. And biopics are very tough, especially when you're moving through two different time periods, and there's so much to cover. Especially with all these musical stories and really capturing the essence of that artist. And I thought it was, especially for any Beach Boys fan, it was such a seamless kind of segue between these two different periods in his life. And they brought us into the studio, and you really got to get into his mind, because he's truly a genius. I think for at that time he was underrated because of the nature of some of his music. Like, his Pet Sounds album was not celebrated as the way it is today at that time.
Yeah.
But it was inspiration for like other huge bands in the UK movement. A lot of his work.
Yeah, he was beloved. It was beloved by other musicians.
Yes, it was recognized by them, but yeah. It didn't do so well. But,
and
in
I
sales.
Think the people that grew up on the Beach Boys didn't embrace it.
Yeah, right? Because they yeah. loved his, you know, Fun in the Sun and those yeah. kind of like theme songs that kind of. And he even talks about them. He's like, I don't feel like speaking about surfing or girls. That's just not where I am as an artist anymore. I have other things to say. And the resistance he met, and just the isolation that he felt in this film, and how difficult his existence was for so long, and his relationship with the person who actually became like in charge of him, his psychiatrist.
That gets dark, doesn't it?
It was a quite dark story. They actually said in the
interview. I didn't see this film. I have to see it.
It's musically, the sound design is incredible. I think the performances are really great. Elizabeth Banks is also a great dramatic actress. I know she also directs as well. She's a very talented woman.
She is.
Yeah, she is. She really is. She's yeah. great. And Paul was nominated for a supporting role for an Oscar, but.
He was.
Yeah, I thought that the film, I was, you know, because we love these musical stories and the music is so infused, but it's that the scenes really give you a good snapshot into his development and the pain and isolation and just everything he was going through. It's a lot, but it was beautifully and seamlessly told. And I think biopics are very tough in that respect. And a lot of them fall flat just because there's too much to cover, or what do you cover? And
yeah, and you're dealing with the... You're dealing with expectations.
Yeah, expectations, because you're dealing with, you know, kind of a music god, and a lot of those ones fall flat too, which I can probably will relate to my...
Yes, well, so for overrated?
For me, Bohemian Rhapsody was again, a picture where you have such a great story to tell, such a fascinating artist who had so many interesting intricacies to his life and challenges and darknesses that he faced. And it, you know, I think if you're a Queen fan, of course, the musical experience kind of just gets you through it. The performances, and Rami Malek as an actor really killed that role. But the writing for me just didn't do justice to the experience of Queen and this character.
And the story was like an after-school special.
Yeah, it just felt very like a Disneyland ride. Yeah, and like you just had to kind of get through the scenes to get to the next musical performance. I was like, okay, like, can this scene just be over now? Because it's making me uncomfortable because it's just not where it should be.
And as a Queen fan, how amazing was it that they used other takes of his vocals from songs so that you got to see him in the studio singing a slightly different version?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was, and that was beautiful. And there were some great studio moments in there. And I'm a big Queen fan and in general, like 60s and 70s. I mean, that's a band that's just transcended time, but like music or originating from that time period is something.
They're a 70s band.
Yeah.
Even though they were around for the 80s.
Yeah. I love musical stories. I like Walk the Line is a great example of a music story that just really works. They get the music in there, but the character development and the story really, I feel like, honors the world of that artist, and stands alone without the music. You know what I mean? Like, is it a good film without the performances? The musical performances, I think, is always a question for me.
For sure.
In those kind of pictures.
And Bohemian Rhapsody.
Without the musical performances.
If you cut out the music and watched everything without, it would be terrible. And actually, I just want to kind of do an edit where I can just watch all the musical scenes.
I'm sure someone will. Maybe you should be the person to do that. I'm sure a lot of people would appreciate it.
I'll just do it for me, though, because if I share it, I don't believe in
pirating. I mean, I hate saying this about other people's work because I think anyone putting their work out there is such a beautiful thing.
No, but it's also historically inaccurate.
Yeah, it's just,
That's tough.
It just feels wrong.
I mean, personal life and musical life, they change facts just for storytelling, which, I don't know. Can you really take artistic license when there's tens of millions of fans or hundreds of millions of fans
that are going to call you out?
That like know, like, okay, they were still recording together while you're pretending they're far apart.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think, in those cases, when you take on something like this, you really have to honor
like it could have been accurate and just as good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like they made it better.
I think sometimes people also get lazy. Sometimes it just feels like the easier out.
And it was the cocky old Hollywood way of doing things. We're like, we're going to rewrite the story because, well, my other theory on that, this podcast shouldn't be about my theory and I know you have to run, but
yeah,
they actually wrote that screenplay with the intention of it going to Broadway. Because it's going to be a Broadway show adaptation.
I can see that. It felt like,
and that's why they simplified it to be extra stupid because every Broadway show you go to,
you just go through the scene and
Like the Broadway show of Wait, we have Pantages season tickets. Yeah. So I see like every like small film that ends up on Broadway and I'm like, oh, that's the worst way to tell a story in Waitress, you know?
That kind of makes a lot of sense to me and I kind of agree with you.
So I think the screenplay was written with Broadway in mind.
I can support that theory.
Well, we'll see. I will be proven right or wrong in the next 5 years when Bohemian Rhapsody wins a Tony.
Right. Well, I mean, let's hope that somehow the scenes get better on the Broadway stage.
It won't be Rami either.
Yeah, that's true. That sounds grim.
Yeah. All right, so your last topic.
Oh, lesser known film.
The last one is lesser known that people should seek out. Although, and honestly, you've already given me two, but.
Well, there's another one. And a director that I feel like has gotten some play this year because his film Shoplifters was nominated as one of the best foreign films this year. His name is Hirokazu Koreeda and is actually an inspiration of mine and was definitely a director I thought about when crafting the story of The Wind Phone, especially the shot list and the aesthetic of it. He has Shoplifters, obviously. He's always at Cannes. Like, he's always got a film. He's very prolific. He works a lot. But I feel like this year, and I think he's been nominated before, actually, but this year I feel like Shoplifters really got a lot of attention, especially as people are really starting to open their eyes to Asian cinema and just in general, like, you know, we had Crazy Rich Asians and just I feel like there's a move really to get more representation of Asian filmmakers and actors. But he has a story, it's called Like Father, Like Son, and it is so gripping. I could give basically the brief premise is this two different families from very different worlds. One is, you know, very well off, and the other is more from a simple town and more into, I guess, their family values. These two families discover that their children were switched at birth. So their children are both now 8 and 9. They've raised these boys and they're informed that their sons are, you know, not theirs. They were accidentally switched at birth and have to make the decision whether or not to switch their children. And this father goes on this incredible journey of seeing kind of his shortcomings because he's not a very hands-on father versus the way this other family operates. And his filmmaking style is so, it's such a restraint and simplicity to it. And it really allows the actors to take over space in a way, you know, he doesn't move shots very quickly. He'll linger on a shot to the point that it's quite daring, I think, sometimes for especially like a more American style filmmaker, you know, and we want to always keep that rhythm of moving and keeping, you know, the audience engaged. And he really allows his actors to inhabit these characters and gives them the space they need to, they become so he's such real people. And he has such a great way of letting life happen on screen. Where you get so entrenched with these characters, and he really is really great at focusing on the intricacies of families and relationships. It's just his work is so beautiful, and it's always so emotionally powerful. Like, you're not going to walk away from one of his films not having a really strong emotional reaction, but he's just very restrained, and there's a simplicity and minimalism to it that's it's really beautiful, and it just serves the story. He's definitely, there's another film, Still Walking, Shoplifters. Most of his films are really,
right, his whole catalog. How many films has he made?
Oh, God.
Like more than a dozen?
I feel like, yeah, something in
oh,
that
so that's a lot, I lot need of to homework. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of homework there. I'm still discovering him. He's like something that came onto my radar more recently, and I'm just like, wow, like, there's a lot to learn from him. But he's, he's always, he's a pretty prolific one of those that just seems to be churning out a lot of work.
Fantastic.
So I definitely recommend him.
I am not surprised that someone who made such a great film has such impressive taste. What can I say? Anytime someone mentions 2001, kind of warms my heart. I go back and forth on it personally. I'm trapped between that or Strangelove being on my list. But when someone locks in on 2001, kind of tells me where they're at. So that was Kristen Gerwig, whose amazing short film, The Wind Phone. You can't watch online yet because it has a shot at being up for an Oscar. I'm not going to re-record this if I find out, like, day after tomorrow that it made the shortlist or it didn't make the shortlist. We're just going to have to hang with it. I don't know if you can hear the jackhammers that just kicked in just outside my window. Suffice to say that I'm doing my best to record in between jackhammer blasts. But if you hear it, my apologies. Okay, so let's wrap this up. Discover Indie Film. It is this podcast and a TV series. I interview the best filmmakers that I've met on the film festival circuit. And that's the podcast. And then the TV series is the short films that really don't have a great home. What we do is we put together the short films into half-hour episodes, sometimes two films, sometimes three, on occasion four. And that is the Discover Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. Just go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, and start watching really great shorts that you can't see anywhere else. Unless you hunt them down on YouTube and Vimeo, and that's not easy. So just watch Discover Indie Film. And you know what? After you watch it, give it 5 stars and a great review. And the last thing I gotta add is film festivals. I program 2 film festivals. That's Film Invasion Los Angeles, that is every June, and the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, that comes every November. I feel like I just wrapped up Sherman Oaks Film Festival, even though that was, I guess, 3 weeks ago, but time is flying, man. Okay, jackhammer or not, I'm going to say goodbye. Thanks for listening.